evening, and welcome to Open Air with Jerry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome to Open Air with Jerry Huber. Good evening, Jerry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. And good. Yourself?
I'm good. You know, I'm kind of self-conscious because I got your email on the 20th about checking in on that question.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So you know that this is kind of a little combination between a trick and a test.
Yes.
And what are you going to do? I mean, we're here on live radio. Are you just going to stop and look inward and see?
Yeah. Well, at least I'm going to pause and pretend that I'm doing that, if nothing else.
Uh-huh. That's always good.
Great. Shall we jump right in?
Let's do.
Okay. We have a caller. I'd like to welcome Andrea from Tacoma, Washington. You're on Open Air with Jerry Huber.
Good afternoon.
Andrea, are you there?
Shucks.
Do you hear me?
Oh, there you are, yes.
How
are
you? Oh, okay. Great.
Good. What's going on?
I'm just calling to connect, actually. I moved to Washington a few months ago, and I guess I just feel really disconnected from the whole Sangha and lonely, actually.
So, not knowing anybody in the area.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Coming from a place of knowing lots of folks in the area.
Yeah, and just, you know, feeling missing everyone and feeling really isolated and lonely and that's what's going on.
What prompted you to make the move?
Well, it was a job, actually. Johan, actually, my husband, got a job, and we didn't really have any prospects in the Bay Area, and so that's one reason we moved. And another reason, I guess, is just I'd always been kind of curious about the Washington area, and so it seemed like an interesting thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So it was purposeful. It's not like you just decided one day to move away and leave everybody you know and go to a strange place.
No.
And it takes a while to feel oneself to be part of a community.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to figure out where everything is challenging.
It is really challenging, and I've just been looking at my whole processes around this loneliness and feeling, and I realize that I've really felt lonely my entire life. And this has really helped me see that, actually, because even when I was in California at work, I would always feel very lonely.
What does lonely feel like?
Well, it's funny because I had talked to the monastery and gotten guidance on this, and the guidance I got is loneliness is being separated from yourself. And I've been thinking a lot about that. And actually, to me, what it feels like is being with self-hate.
So if you were completely alone, you suspect it wouldn't be as bad as being left alone with self-hate.
Yes. Because I've been alone in my hermitage at the monastery and have felt a lot of support and compassion from people, and you know, I just feel that support, and I don't feel that right now.
And so having no one else around has really clarified the fact that this is very familiar.
Yeah.
That this feeling, that you've had this feeling all of your life.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it's this kind of alienated feeling, and what happens is, as I've also been looking at I don't know if you remember, but the guidance that you gave me years ago was to put down the bell, and so basically to put down the process, to come back to the breath.
Uh-huh.
And the question I've been looking at is, how do I step into that process, and how do I slide down that hole? And I've noticed that what happens a lot of times is two things. Either one, I wake up feeling a certain way, or the other is that I get talked into it. I go through a story, and that talks me into it, and then I feel really lonely and full of self-hate.
And what it sounds like is you get talked out of relating to anything except the voices of self-hate.
Yeah.
So they become your only relationship, your only companion.
Pretty much. And even though I'm home with an infant, this happens when Yuhan is gone, you know, when there's no one around. And even though I'm home with someone, it's still there. And yet my son takes me out of that. But still, you know, it's there. It's definitely there.
Uh-huh. So I'll project. You're there with the baby.
Yeah.
And then your attention gets drawn to a conversation, to a story.
Right.
And as long as you're involved in that story, that's your relationship.
Right.
When you can remember to turn your attention away from that and back to your son, then those feelings of alienation and loneliness go away.
Or they decrease.
They decrease. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, they go away. The only way that we could say they decrease is that if you check back in with them to see what their volume is, mm-hmm. and of course, as soon as you check in, then that's what's there.
Right.
But during the time that you're not attending to the self-hate or to the voices or the story, they don't exist.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I just beat people over the head with the importance of being able to direct the attention.
Right.
Yeah, because you know, if you could keep your attention on the baby all day long, there wouldn't be any room for self-hate.
Right.
Now, it's not that that would be what I would encourage, because of course the more helpful approach is to keep the attention turned inward, to stay with the breath, with awareness, and allow that awareness to expand to include both of you and everything else that's around you, which is a very effective way of not having any attention left over for the voices of self-hatred.
What I guess I'm watching is the process of the self-hatred, and then there's also this part of me that's deciding, noodling, what should I do?
That's also self-hatred, isn't it?
It seems like it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because then there seems to be several possibilities. One is to just face down the loneliness and just be there as aware as possible and really experience loneliness. Another is, well, I need to...
Which you couldn't actually do, right? Because loneliness is a story.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really face down a story.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because if you turn all of your attention to the story, there's nothing there to maintain the story.
Right.
Yeah, so loneliness is an idea. It's a label. It's a... You know, it's a construct. Yeah?
Yeah, I guess maybe then the thought is that what I need to do is be this perfect monk. And
right, which is more of the story that we could also call self-hate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that comes through is, well, I need to find activities and meet people. And
which is another part of the story.
Uh-huh.
Right? So I'm going to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And these are all of the ways that I could solve the problem. But the moment I say, I am going to solve this problem, I have created the problem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? And then I go into what should I do about it. So I'm firmly over here in egocentric karmic conditioning, being the one who has a problem, who's going to come up with a solution, who's going to do something about this problem so that... And, of course, what works is to simply lose interest in that and get back here to the present, to what's actually going on. And what we get to immediately is, well, right here, you know, I'm just here. There isn't anything going on. Mm-hmm. And then the story starts up again. Well, yeah, but I mean, you're lonely. You know, here you are. You don't. There's nobody around. There's no support. There's no community. Yeah.
Yeah, and also, you know, the story is, oh, I wouldn't be able to relate to anyone here, which has been my story my whole life, is that I can't relate to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's also another belief that goes on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's another story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a conversation. And so that conversation, you know, when we're in a very close relationship with somebody, that's one of the things that happens. We talk to each other. We talk to each other perhaps a lot about a lot of things. Then the closer the relationship is, the more things that we share together, the more intimate the sharing is. So if that intimate primary relationship is with self-hatred, then the conversation is going to go on all the time about, you know, what I'm experiencing and what this feels like and what's wrong and who other people are and how they are and how that's not going to work
and what's wrong with me and I'm wasting my life and that I'm not doing anything useful. That's another story that comes
up. Yep. You know, we're closing in on something here.
Uh-huh.
And that is, the story is the problem.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what the story is. Even the story that the story is the problem.
Uh-huh.
Which takes us to that place of just, okay, let's give it all up and breathe.
Right. And so I notice I just fall into this hole of the story, and I believe it so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And one thing I have to say is I haven't been meditating as much because...
I could have guessed that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the excuse is I've been so busy with moving and haven't had the time, and
mm-hmm.
yesterday
I certainly
did it.
But what I've had is the time to engage
with
the story. Yeah. Plenty of time for that. So yesterday you meditated?
Yes, I did meditate yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And, well, what I find when I meditate is it seemed like meditation for me was much more effective when I first started out.
Sure, because there wasn't the familiarity that supports the attention wandering to a story about it.
Exactly.
And that's why I like moving to new places. That's why I like change.
Interesting.
Because when you're in a new place, as you've noticed, you have to really be there. You can't just trust the car to go where it's supposed to go.
No.
Mm-hmm. Because you'll get lost a lot.
And the funny thing is, you asked me why I moved here. I just gave you a partial answer. Another answer was that I had this story going on about California, how I had to get out. I couldn't take it. It's like two sides of a duality, which is one is, I need to run away and go somewhere else, and then life will be better.
Uh-huh.
Another is, once I'm somewhere else, then I need to get back to California,
right,
and life will be better.
Yep. It's always a story of something wrong and not enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the truth. Yeah. So you know what the answer is.
Drop it
and come back to the breath.
Right.
Drop it and come back to the breath. You know, there you are with the baby. Just come back to your senses. What am I seeing? What am I hearing? What am I smelling? What am I tasting? What am I feeling? What's conditioned mind doing? Drop it. Here I am. Here's the breath. Where am I? Where are my feet? What am I seeing? What am I smelling? What am I tasting?
Yeah.
Over and over and over. It's great. You know, that baby is hard to bore.
That's true. Yeah.
That's the one great thing about small children. You can just sit there and make faces at them for 24 hours, and till they get hungry or they need new clothes, they're perfectly content. Do the same thing over and over and over. They're good role models for us.
He is a really good role model for
mm-hmm.
me. He says.
Yep. So drop it. Get back here.
Well, then what comes up is this story that I need support from the Sangha. I'm too far away, and I need people around. You know,
right. those very same people that you had to get away from.
I know it's just so ridiculous. But.
Yeah. All right. Well, keep us posted.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Sherry. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome William from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, William.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Good. You?
I guess I'm doing all right.
You're working along.
I am working along, and I wanted to check back in with you, and I guess ask, kind of just share where I am now,
mm-hmm.
and maybe ask for some guidance or whatever. Just your
next steps.
Exactly.
Suggestions for next steps.
Exactly.
All right.
Let's see. I guess staying kind of with the content of my relationship to my family. A while back when we talked, you asked me if it felt like an addiction, and I said, "Yeah, I guess it does." And you know, about the my karmic kind of connection with them, and
mm-hmm.
and I guess the one thing that sort of happened after, kind of starting to think about that, it's almost like I had like. Almost like this breaking through of a denial type feeling of, you know, almost like a like an alcoholic finally saying, you know, I really have a problem with this.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of felt like that, and like I've been kind of trying to think this isn't really a problem. And it kind of took on this story in my head like, oh my goodness, this really, you know, it is a problem. That I have, and it felt a little, you know, it kind of was disorienting, and, you know, I started to feel like I, you know, the way I'm doing it, if I keep doing it that way, it's going to be more of the same, so sort of a desire to do it differently, but a lack of sort of an awareness of how to do that, and a fear, and you know, kind of, you know, like that kind of scary, you know, like, oh, now what do I do? And in the midst of that, also kind of starting to look for, you know, just starting to grasp for other forms of support and, you know, obviously thinking of my relationship with my family as an addiction, it kind of led me to thinking more in terms of, like, that codependent structure. And, you know, I even attended a few CODA meetings. And, you know, I was even considering some talk to my therapist, and there was even a thought of, you know, do I even want to enter some form of longer retreat, you know, at some sort of center where they deal with these sorts of things to kind of, you know, help me work through some of this. And so I've, you know, a lot of things are going through my mind, and in the midst of it too, I've really been avoiding. I mean, I've kind of withdrawn from my family, and in not a very open and clear way. I haven't really been telling them. I've just been avoiding them. I've just been staying away. And so there's some guilt feeling about like not really being communicative to them about what's going on. And
so, William, let me ask you this. Can you see that the process that is going on right now is the same process that was going on before? It's just that you're at the other side of the content?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So as we were talking about with Andrea a minute ago, there's the conversation. There's the story. And so there's a story going along, and the person is in relationship to the story. Okay, so this is happening, so I need to do this, and I need to feel this way, and I need to say this, and then they'll do this, and then I'll do, okay? And then, whoa, wait a minute, this may not be a healthy relationship. Okay, all right, okay, well then, what I need to do is this, and I'll say this, and I'll act like this, and then they'll...
Right.
So it's exactly the same situation. Nothing has actually changed. So if I'm obsessing about drinking alcohol, and then somebody tells me that I may be an alcoholic, and I begin to obsess about not drinking alcohol, I haven't actually gone anywhere.
Right, right.
So the secret to this, as maybe you can sense with the alcohol thing, I'm not going to get to a different place going down the same path.
Okay. I intellectually, that makes sense. Experientially, it seems like I don't grasp how to...
Well, the secret is to stop. To stop. To simply say, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just going to do nothing, not think about this, not worry about it for a month. Not going to figure it out. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not going to do anything. Going to take a break. Just stop. So when the mind... conditioned mind wants to start obsessing again, say, no, we're not doing that. Taking a break. I'm just going to be here. Can you get a sense of that?
Yeah. I was going to say that I feel like I have had moments when I'm doing that, like when I start to think about, you know, there's a voicemail from my younger brother, and I feel this sort of pressure, like I'm supposed to call him and let him know what's going on or whatever. And then I, you know, so the urgency comes up in my head, and then there's times when I say, well, that's just the story. There's no urgency. I mean,
that's right. And one of the things you indicated is that you haven't exactly done this skillfully. And so it might be helpful to do it skillfully. You know, just drop people a note and say, everything's fine. I've got some stuff going on. I'm probably not going to be in touch that much for the next few weeks. Don't worry about it. Everything is great. Get back with you soon.
Okay, yeah, I actually sort of had, it wasn't as skillful as it just sounded coming out of your mouth, but I had a little bit of that with my mom's been calling because she's worried. And
yeah.
I spoke with her today and just kind of told her that I needed some time and I am okay, but, you know, tried to tell her.
Yeah, and, you know, you could send cards.
Right.
Yeah, just drop a little note.
Okay.
Send a little gift, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that indicates that, yeah, I know you're there, I'm thinking about you, and I'm fine. And then within yourself, you're practicing dropping the story, getting out of the loop.
Right.
Because that's where the addiction is. The addiction is actually not to your family. The addiction is to conditioned mind, to the drama and the suffering that conditioned mind is constantly generating.
So one question I have about, because obviously I'm so addicted to the story, right away my mind goes to, okay, so am I supposed to just, you know, okay, I'll stop it for a while, I'll just drop it, and then hopefully I'll figure something out later on, and I guess...
Well, so, you know, you called up and you've had this really stressful job, and you finally made the decision that you're going to leave it, and you're not going to make any decisions about anything for a month. You're not going to think about what you're going to do next. You're not going to think about what you just finished up with. You're just going to give yourself 1 month total vacation from being concerned about work.
And then revisit it in a month, right?
Revisit it in a month. So if the voices come up and say, yeah, but what's going to happen in a month? Whoop, that's part of the conversation we're not having. This is hiatus.
So right now, the focus, the main thing for me to keep my mind on is just dropping the story. Don't worry about anything else. Just being here.
Being here. Right. Being where you are. Just breathing.
In 2 weeks, I do get to go to the, I'm going to the Rehoboth, there's nothing wrong with you.
Oh, very good. What a perfect time.
That is a perfect time. Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have a week after that for your hiatus.
Yes.
That'd be very good.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, let us know, huh?
Okay. So, okay. Basically, right now, the idea of just even just setting it as a month and then
You're on vacation. You're on vacation from worrying about any of these kinds of issues.
Okay.
You're on a family vacation.
That sounds good. Well, my anxiety has gone down in the mornings. I have noticed that. So I don't know what that means, but when I was in the midst of this a little bit more deeply a few weeks ago, my mornings were horrendous. And
yeah, and the more distance you have from it, the less time you spend with conditioning, working yourself up into a state, the calmer everything is going to get.
Okay. So I don't have to understand this all
right
now.
Nope. You're on a beach.
Okay.
You're on a beach somewhere. White, sandy beach. There's the ocean, the palm trees, a little breeze. You don't have to think about anything.
Okay. And also nothing to prepare for the Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Yep.
Just let that happen, right?
Read the book.
Read the book. I have read that. I'll reread it.
Okay. That's all you got to do.
Okay.
Show up with a good appetite.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm known to have one of those.
Okay, good.
All right. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. I'm eager to hear what happens.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, William. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Next on Open Air, in our second segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. The phone lines are open here. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. If you're further away, you can reach us at 001, which will get you to the U.S., 858-268-3068. Again, the phone lines are open, so give us a call. Sherry, we have some email questions here.
All right.
I've been listening to the archived tapes of the shows and have a question about hearing you say being present and being conscious. You tell us, don't wait 1 minute, do it now, because we don't know when or if we'll have the opportunity again. What I hear when I hear this is that I've found this and other Eastern practices, and that something, my life path, whatever, has brought me to this place, and that I need to throw myself into it totally now. Now, the part I'm unclear on is, are you also saying that after I die, I may not have another life where this will be possible,
or may not have another lifetime at all. Also connected to this is something I've heard a voice inside my head say occasionally over the years. Quote, boy, you're going to have a really good life next time around because you sure work hard at this consciousness stuff now, but my life isn't very happy or connected. So all this work and reading and practice and going to workshops will have some good effect for the next person I become, unquote. And I'm not even Catholic. The feeling when the subpersonality says this to me is a strange mix of humor and resignation. I'm aware of a lifetime belief that, quote, I just can't get it now. I got a bad deal in this life. Happiness isn't here for me in any ongoing way, just occasionally, enough to go into depression and rage when life turns lousy and difficult, which it has for long periods of time. And all the New Agey stuff about, quote, my thoughts create my reality, unquote, practice gratitude, do nothing for this belief when I feel this way. In fact, it all makes me almost rageful, and it is denying how I actually feel. I appreciate you and the entire Sangha. From a listener.
Well, my goodness, that's a lot, isn't it? Of course, you know, the... if we go all the way back up to the top, I'm not saying any of that. You know, it always amazes me when people approach me with, you say this, and what I feel is this. It's like, what? Those two things don't have anything to do with each other. You know, what I hear you saying is this. Well, okay, that's what you hear me saying, but that doesn't have anything to do with what I'm saying. So, you know, it's just the God's truth. We don't know how much time we have. We don't know if we have a next moment. You know, if we could get a, you know, do a, could we hear from you, sir, for all of the people who, you know, were alive one moment and keeled over dead the next, they would confirm that, in fact, you don't know that you have another moment. And so is it important to take advantage of the opportunity? Absolutely. Am I going to speak to next lives or that sort of thing? No, I'm not. And, you know, why? So there's what's going on here and now. So when conditioning is told something that goes against its survival system, it gets rageful. That's not really surprising. As far as that being New Age, well, if the Buddha was New Age, then that's New Age. And so there we are. I don't know what to say. You know, does conditioning like this? No, conditioning doesn't like it. That's why monasteries are not more popular places. You see, egos don't like the information that says how you're doing it isn't working. It needs to be different for it to work. And, you know, I wish there were another kind of information to give, but there really isn't. And when we come back to center, we know that. We know that that's the case. So there we are. I don't know what else to say about that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I'm sure that answer won't be popular, but what are you going to do?
So ego's not interested in having light shined on it.
Oh.
Such as would happen at a monastery.
Oh, no. You know, I say to people all the time, if your life really isn't working, your life really isn't working, you're unhappy, you're not a happy person, as this person is describing, then stop living that life and live another life. Now, for me, live that other life meant go to a monastery. That's just what occurred to me to do. Now, something else could occur to them. But the idea is to stop doing what I'm doing that isn't working and figure out what will work and devote one's life to that. Mm-hmm. That's the point. Mm-hmm. Rather than just going along doing the same thing, getting ticked off that I get the same result. You know, that's that old saw. Insanity or whatever it is doing the same thing over and over, hoping to get a different result.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not working and I continue to be unhappy, then what do I need to do to make my life work and to be happy. That seems like a more essential approach than it really ticks me off when people say these things. Well, in my experience, those are true statements that the writer is quoting. So if I'm not having that experience, if the information that I'm getting is happiness lies in the present moment, okay, well, rather than be ticked off that I don't seem to be able to live in the present moment and therefore I'm not happy, I'm going to figure out how to live in the present moment.
Uh-huh.
That seems to me like a more effective, efficient way of approaching it.
Uh-huh. Finding out what makes me happy.
That's right. And so if it is get into the present moment, okay, how do I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that just seems reasonable to me. And I hear people say, well, you know, I have a family and I have a job and I have bills and I have responsibility. Okay, then if that's what I'm choosing to do, I can't really complain that that things don't work for me, because almost nobody is saying, just go ahead and do everything the way you're doing it and sooner or later you'll be happy.
Mm.
Almost nobody says that. And if they do, I can promise you, they're selling something. So I'd love to hear, I wish these people would call in so that we could have a conversation.
Yeah.
Instead of sending in an email with this whole list of when this, then this, and this, and then this, and because these, you know, each one of these is worthy of a conversation, but it's difficult when somebody just presents a kind of a story, let's face it, it's a story, and then presents a conclusion and their comment on that.
Yeah.
So there, I've commented on that.
Great. Thank you, Sherry. And we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome George from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, George.
Hey, Sherry and Michael. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. You?
Oh, doing very well.
Good.
Very well.
What's going on?
I can't imagine that anybody could be having more fun in life than me.
Well, this is a very good thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm sort of quoting you from the Kripalu weekend, but I very strongly identified with that statement when you made it.
Uh-huh.
Or some such statement like that.
Uh-huh.
So I just wanted to kind of for everybody to get out their libation cups, and because I just have this whole barrel full of gratitude and appreciation that I just want to pour out and fill up everybody's cup.
Uh-huh. All right.
With encouragement about this practice.
Mm-hmm.
I have noticed lately that there has been kind of the progress of our practice is so gradual, and sometimes this seems so plodding, and even sometimes seems to be going backwards instead of forwards, and it gets very discouraging sometimes, and the voices of self-hate and conditioning come in to tell us how badly we're really doing and why don't we give up and so on and so forth. There's so much of that that I just wanted to call in and kind of present a whole new perspective that I have I feel like I've taken kind of a quantum leap with the practice. Some things have happened recently that I've kind of realized that something like that has happened, something pretty deep and has happened in that regard. And one of the things that I noticed this summer, and this is after doing the year-long email class, two There's Nothing Wrong With You retreats, listening to There's Nothing Wrong With You CD, probably 100 times, listening to every podcast, doing yoga and meditation every day, and all of the things that we do. I noticed this summer, for the first time that I can remember, that when I ran into someone or read about someone or saw someone who was doing something that I considered something that I did well, and they were doing it better than I was doing it, I would feel diminished.
Mm-hmm.
I would feel, you know, the voices would come in and they would say, see, you really, you know, you're not doing very well, and so on. And I would believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go into a kind of, you know, feeling of envy or jealousy or whatever. And I've noticed for the past several months now that when something like that occurs, I hear that voice. But what I hear much stronger than that is that, wow, that is inspiring. That is amazing that this person's been able to do that. And I am inspired and filled by their ability or their success or their, you know, I'm filled with appreciation as if they were me.
Uh-huh.
As if there was no separation.
Right. Because that person is doing whatever that is for all of us.
For all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Exactly. And so that was one clue that something that, you know, the whole dismantling of the ego that we did through the email class, through that entire class, I felt I was miserable.
Mm.
I thought I was at the bottom of the class. I thought, you know, I'd read other people's, you know, experiences and so on, and it seemed like my experiences were just about the most miserable experiences of anybody, you know, taking that class.
Mm.
But I'm beginning to see now that there has been dismantling that has taken place.
Uh-huh.
And I've also noticed that just recently I had something happen in my life that would normally be devastating, really devastating to the ego, and literally threatening.
Mm.
And that has still not been resolved by any means. In fact, it's still completely in the dark about it. And yet, my feeling is that I feel like I'm trusting life.
Mm.
You know, I'm trusting whatever's happening, whatever life is doing, whatever God is doing. You know, whatever God's will is in this particular situation, whatever the next move is for me, whatever the next experience is for me, I'm ready.
Uh-huh.
I'm ready for it. I'm not afraid of it. I'm not upset that things are not, you know, going any according to my expectations at all. In fact, they seem to be going in the opposite direction. But that fear is... The fear does come up. It comes up in my dreams sometimes. It comes up during the day, and I'll kind of go, and then I'll look at it, and I'll realize what it is, and I'll come back to center.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. I actually just got an email from somebody who said, is it okay to write about how well life is going? And I said, yeah. You know,
yeah.
This is actually a path of ending suffering.
Yes.
And so to celebrate the whatever ends to suffering we see
is
a very, very good thing.
Yeah, we seem to dwell on the opposite much of the time that when something like this happens. I mean, who knows what's going to happen next week?
Exactly.
Next week I could be back in the, you know.
You could be dead.
We already
established that in the last little conversation there. You could be dead.
Yeah.
And so
right.
So it's great to celebrate it now.
It truly is, and there's a little trick that I discovered that has been really powerful for me, and that is when I'm doing meditating in the morning, part of my meditation routine is to recite, we are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, you know, we will end suffering, and so on. And then what I do at the end of that is I say, ending suffering is more important than, and I allow everything, every anxiety that happens to be lurking around to come up.
Mm.
Ending suffering is more important than, and then I will recite whatever anxiety it is,
mm-hmm.
and I will feel that anxiety lift
mm-hmm.
and just kind of disappear.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. That's a helpful little tip.
It's a great little.
This is what could be going on. This is what I choose.
Yeah.
My attention could go to all of these other things, and habit would support that.
Yeah.
What I choose to turn my attention to is this.
Yeah.
What I'm practicing is ending suffering. What I'm practicing is being here.
Yeah.
I'm not practicing supporting conditioning and fear and inadequacy and self-hate.
Yeah.
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 Well, that's very good.
Oh, it's
well, thank
good.
You, sir.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
We appreciate
thank you,
the good
Michael,
news.
For, you know, for, I mean, these podcasts are just, you know, food for the process. Just absolutely wonderful, and I feel essential to this whole process. So,
all right,
great.
Appreciate what you guys are doing.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, Sherry and Michael.
Goodbye.
Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, I still have some more email questions here.
All right. Now, if they're long, we have to start breaking these down, you know, mini paragraph by mini paragraph.
Okay, I got a short one here.
All right, good.
We are two girls from England who have just discovered your show on the Internet. We love it, and we love you. We are in the process of listening to your back catalog of shows, which are thought-provoking and inspiring. We do have a question for you and would much appreciate if you could find time to answer it. Once we've worked out the time differences, hopefully we can give you a call. Our question, is there any part of thinking mind that isn't conditioned? Thank you from two listeners.
That's great. It's 2 a.m., I think we've doped out, haven't we? We
yeah,
haven't heard from our... we have one main pal in England that we
yeah.
hear from, right, who gets
yeah.
up at... Or a couple of them, actually,
yeah.
who get up at 2 a.m. So that is a really interesting question. And a lot of it has to do, we could say, with semantics, but not really. So I'm going to say some things... And then these two gals are going to look very, very carefully to see what their experience of this is, because it's an experiential thing. It's not an intellectual thing. So a while back I was encouraging, I guess we were encouraging William. Of course, we're always encouraging everybody to drop the story. Andrea, too, huh? So to drop whatever conditioned mind is wanting us to attend to and come back to the present. Now, if we don't recognize the experience of being in the present, then it can sound like what I'm going to do is drop reality as I know it and just step off the edge of the universe. I'm just going to sit there in some sort of void. It's probably dark and it's absolutely silent. And that's not the case at all. The conditioned mind that we're talking about is something that we are encouraged by karma, by conditioning, to turn our attention to rather than being here. So what that looks like is that there's what's going on here, and then there's the story that's running concurrently. Now, that gets a little tricky, because when you're caught up in the story, you don't actually know what's happening here. And technically speaking, the story is also happening here. Okay? So when you drop the story, when you turn your attention back to the present, for a split second, it can seem like there's nothing going on. Okay? Because we could say you're in the space between the thoughts. So you come back here, and because conditioned mind operates the way it does, then there's going to be a call immediately to get your attention to go somewhere else, to get involved in something else. That's why we meditate, to practice coming back here and keeping our attention and awareness both here. So as we practice that, here we are. Now, what we begin to notice is, there are sights, there are sounds, there's movement, there's... Everything is going on, and I can practice staying right here. So when I, a little bit ago, I went through that, check in with what you're seeing, what you're hearing, what you're smelling, what you're tasting, what you're feeling, and so forth, and with what conditioned mind is doing, okay? So you can be here and you're noticing all of that going on, and then you'll begin to notice something else. And that is that there is something that can look shockingly like thought, that is in fact not the same process as conditioned mind. It's not the conversation. It's not the reaction that conditioned mind is. It's actually something that's happening in the present. Now, often we'll recognize it quickest when it takes the form of what we would call insight, or there is word or sentence language put to present moment experience. But it's not the reaction that we get from conditioned mind. It's an actual expression in language of what's going on currently. So that's my encouragement to these gals and anybody else who would like to take it on, mm-hmm. to begin to sit, preferably quietly, in meditation, is how we usually think of that, and begin to watch those subtle movements and those subtle differences in what's going on in what we talk about as mind.
That was fascinating. I was just following along as you were doing that. So when we come back to the present and we're here, there can be words or sentences that come up in the present.
Yes. My favorite example, but I don't want to limit it to this. My favorite example is that I'm leaving the house and I'm going somewhere, and you know, I've gotten ready and done all of the things that one does, and I'm five steps out of the front door, and the information just appears in my mind. Get the blah blah. And sure enough, it was something that I hadn't thought to bring. And maybe, now, in some cases, I think, oh, thank God, because of course I'm going to need that. Mm-hmm. And I would have forgotten it, and I would have gotten, you know, God knows where, and then I would have remembered it. It used to be at 37,000 feet, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the pilot would make the announcement that we had hit cruising altitude, and then a voice would come in. And this is very different. A voice would come in that would say, you forgot your whatever it was. And it's like, if you knew that all along, why did you wait? Okay. But this information just appears. It's not a voice that's talking to me in that kind of way that conditioning can do. But it just appears, you know. Take a flashlight. And I turn around and go get the flashlight. Sometimes I don't see why I'm going to get a flashlight. Sometimes it's quite obvious that it's something that I need for the meeting that I'm going to. So just to watch those, play with that, see what's there, and see if you can get a sense of where it's coming from and those subtle kinds of differences.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Sherry, we have about a minute left. Would you like to give some homework? We haven't done homework.
Oh, well, I'd love it.
A long time.
Yeah, I'd love it if people would look at that and report back what they see.
That would be fun.
Yeah, I would love to hear what people imagine when I say just drop it all and come to the present. You know, what conditioning offers up as what life is going to be if you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever experiences that people have of it, what's actually there, and then any of these kinds of subtle messages and different thought forms and conversations that go on in the present.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And
be fun.
People will call in next week and
yes.
report their experiences.
Absolutely. Be good.
Great.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
See you then.
Okay.
Bye.
Good night.